Hey, everybody. Welcome to Movie Crush, Mini Crush Horror Movie Spooktacular Part 2. And I'm in the studio, everybody, with Joe and Robert from Stuff to Blow Your Mind. Hi, guys.
Hey. Hey. Thanks for having us on the show, man.
You doing good?
Yeah, pretty good. Pretty good.
Doing great. Yeah.
So for everyone, for the uninitiated, Stuff to Blow Your Mind was one of our original suite of stuff shows. I think it was originally called Stuff from the Science Lab?
Correct, no. Yes.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
Oh, okay. And that name wasn't great. But and it changed a lot over the years from sort of kind of, I hate to say mainstream science, but it got a lot more offbeat and out there when you guys kind of got on board. So why don't you tell everyone just briefly what your show's all about?
Well, let's see. It is still a science show. I don't know how offbeat I'd say we are. I'd say that we still try to bring a mainstream scientific skeptical kind of perspective. We're not like out there peddling the science of, you know, crystal healing or something
that. No, of course
but
not.
I think maybe what you've detected is that we tend to, because of our interests, sort of put science on a collision course with weird other topics.
Yeah.
So we end up talking about how science topics intersect with movie monsters,
right,
and with, you know, epic poems of history and stuff like that.
Yeah, I guess part of it just comes from us being a bit offbeat and, like, if we're going to try and describe some sort of, in some cases, you know, pretty heady scientific topic.
Yeah.
Sometimes the metaphors we're going to turn to are going to be things like, say, the Highlander movies.
Right.
The first two, anyway.
Yeah, it's, I think of all of our shows, it intersects a lot. Like, I think listeners to Movie Crush would really dig it because it intersects with film a lot of times, reference-wise and just, I don't know, sort of your approach. So I think people would appreciate it, listeners to this show.
Cool. Well, I hope they check it out.
Yeah.
Just as a sample, like every October, we spend the whole month doing basically horror-themed episodes.
Yeah, I was going to ask about that.
So just a couple of examples. One episode we did earlier this month was about a British water demon called Jenny Greenteeth, who is this lady.
God.
Yeah, she lurks in the stagnant pools, the old marl pits that have been dug out in the North English countryside, and now they're full of water, and they've got this green type of vegetation floating on top so they can look just like flat ground that a child could run into and fall. So people came up with this story about this demoness who haunts the waters named Jenny Greenteeth, who will pull the children in.
Oh, my God.
But that gave us a good chance to – so we love talking about, like, the folklore and the mythology there,
yeah,
but then we also got to talk about, like, water to land attacks in biology, where you've got, like, in France, there are these catfish that have adapted to jump out of the river and snag pigeons off the bank and pull them in. Yeah.
Man.
But then also get into the just the psychology of why we make up stories like that, or why those stories kind of emerge from human culture. Like, why take something that is a naturally occurring dangerous hazard,
yeah,
and then put this additional layer of horrific fiction over it, a horrific folklore.
Right.
And then give it to our children.
That's awesome. Yeah,
exactly. We've got great listeners. You know, they come up with great ideas in response to our episodes a lot.
Uh-huh.
I mean, one thing a lot of listeners have gotten in touch with us after the Jenny Greenteeth episode to say is, you know, it probably has something to do with the idea of the agency of the danger, where, like, a child being warned about, you know, there are pools out there, you could fall in and drown. The kid's like, ah, who cares?
Right.
Yeah, I'll be fine.
But Jenny Greenteeth.
Right. You tell them that there's a monster that they have no control over. Like, the monster, it's outside their, you know, they can't be too confident about what a monster could do to them.
Right. So it's just sort of a mild form of psychological child abuse.
Right, exactly. And it can go too far. Like, we talked about this one weird example I found from a journal in, like, the early modern England, where there was, like, this girl who got some riding clothes dirty, and she was afraid her parents would be mad at her. So what the historical records say is that she drowned herself in a pool, thinking that she could come back as one of these water demonesses after she drowned there.
That's awesome. Man, that's good stuff.
That's not awesome.
Well, I mean, you know, as a story.
Yes.
Or was that real?
I mean, as far as I know, that's a true story. Yeah.
Well, then that's not awesome.
But, like, cinematically, it's all of this eventually manifested in Ridley Scott's Legend, that Meg Mucklebones character rises up to threaten Tom Cruise at one point. That's essentially Meg Mucklebones. I mean, that's essentially Jenny Greenteeth.
Huh. So that's where that came from?
I think I'm pretty positive.
She's got to be a Jenny Greenteeth. Yeah. I mean, there are other characters like that. It's not just Jenny Greenteeth. There's a general sort of class of water demonesses that live around the world. So she could be inspired by one of them. But yeah, I think it's got to be Jenny Greenteeth.
Yeah,
right?
It has to be.
That Green is the skin. Most awesome monster. I love Meg Mucklebones.
Yeah, that was one of the questions I posed actually last week. We just did a bunch of I do a lot of on the mini crushes interaction with the Facebook group. And I was just like, what's the scariest killer? What's the best weapon in horror movies? And we got a lot of like great responses, but no one said that one. That's a good one.
Well, Meg Mucklebones is a great example of something that comes up on our show all the time, which is like a monster that's better than the movie it's in.
Yeah.
Like Legend is, unfortunately, for
it's
all of its wonderful aesthetic qualities and the fact that it's got Tim Curry, just the best human to ever live.
Yeah.
it's such a slog. Like, can you get through it?
Yeah.
I don't know.
It's tough.
Well, then also that monster in particular, it's not even – it's just a side quest that pops up. It's kind of like the Boba Fett of that film where you see it, you're super into it, you just want more of this creature, and then it's gone and doesn't come back.
You see, everybody, I told you. These guys.
What?
If you want to listen to a science show and you like movies, these are the dudes. So, Joe, I have to sell Noel out a little bit. He said last week that you guys were great to get in here because it'll be a little more deep into the horror canon and stuff that not quite as mainstream. And he said that just get ready because Joe likes bad horror movies.
Oh, yeah. We both love bad horror movies.
Yeah. More and more it's the bad ones I think I'm drawn to.
Uh-huh.
And we've talked about this a fair amount. I feel like I think with a really solid horror film, it's doing all the thinking for you, which is great.
Yeah.
At times, but if you have a horror film that's rougher around the edges, maybe has some long, boring spells in there, it gives you time to think, and you're kind of trying to fix the film in your mind,
right.
And or just creating extra layers of meaning that were totally not intended to be there, and I enjoy that more and more these days.
Well, I guess it's a little more participatory that way.
Yeah,
yeah.
Just watched the first Halloween. Well, I saw the new Halloween. In Phoenix a couple of days ago.
I haven't seen it yet, so don't spoil anything.
Well, Michael gets a little stabby. I don't want to ruin
really?
Anything.
Yeah? A little bit?
He gets a little stabby. But then last night, I was on West Coast time still, so I was kind of up late, and I queued up the original Halloween, which I hadn't seen in a long, long time. So it was cool to see all the references, and the new one was a lot more referential to the first than I had remembered, but I was fine with it. I've seen people kind of poke at that a little bit. But, I mean, it's a great homage. It was really good. I thoroughly enjoyed it.
The original Halloween is – it's kind of unimpeachable. I mean, I love it. So you saw it for the first time on, like, a new, like, good TV, right? Would that be
yeah,
the
case? Yeah,
so,
yeah.
So, like, did you see for the first time that, like, oh, it's not actually autumn. This is, like, summertime in California and everything's green.
A little bit,
orange leaves scattered about.
There's a palm tree here and there in the, like, deep background.
Yeah.
But I'm sort of used to, like, looking for L.A., in movies, although it's not quite as bad, these days because they don't film everything there. But, yeah, that's like Pasadena.
Yeah.
That famous hedge, a friend of mine, or you guys might know Matt Gourley. He does the James Bonding podcast and another movie podcast called I Was There Too. And
I've heard of that, yeah.
Yeah, it's where he talks to sort of like the fifth or sixth person on the call sheet of famous movies.
Mm-hmm.
But he's a big Halloween guy and lived very close to that street or the streets where they filmed that and took great pictures at the famous hedge where, Michael's standing there and then he's there 1 second and then behind the bush the next.
Mm-hmm.
And it's all still there.
That's the stuff that makes the movie. Like,
oh, yeah.
The best part of Halloween, in my opinion, is not actually like after the murders start. It's all that stuff in the first half where Jamie Lee Curtis is, she's in school or she's at home looking out the window or something. And you just see him for a second out there and then he's gone. And the way those shots interact with the music is just so perfect. The music also makes that movie.
Oh, for sure.
Yeah, that's probably my favorite part about Halloween, because I don't think it's really my favorite Carpenter film. It's probably not even like my top 10 Carpenter films.
It's not even my favorite Halloween film.
Oh, yeah. Halloween 3.
Yeah, that's what Noel told me.
Yeah.
I haven't seen that one. So I know that one doesn't feature Michael Myers, and it's about...
Well, it does. He's on TV in it. There's a scene where characters are watching the original Halloween.
Okay, so what's the deal, though? It's about a horror mask company?
Yes, but also like a techno-pagan conspiracy with a kind of ambiguous... goals in mind, perhaps world domination, or maybe they just want to kill all the children.
Maybe I should just explain the plot to you.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
So it's got the old man from RoboCop. You remember Dan O'Herlihy?
Yeah.
He's the head
sure.
of the boardroom. Detroit has a cancer. And the cancer is crying.
Yeah.
That guy. So he runs a company that you find out over the course of the movie. You've got like Tom Atkins and Stacy Nelkin. You know, Tom Atkins, like masculine, kind of like strawberry blonde Burt Reynolds.
I don't know. I would probably recognize him.
He's in The Fog. Have you seen The Fog?
Yeah, yeah.
Yeah, he's the like strawberry blonde mustache guy in The Fog.
Okay, yeah, I know
that
guy.
So he plays like a beer-swilling surgeon with a nagging ex-wife. And so he ends up going with this young lady to investigate the death of her father in this town in California. And the town is like this – it's this weird fascist town that's run by this company that makes Halloween masks that are enormously successful. And like every shop in the country's got to have them. The kids are obsessed with them. And they air these TV commercials that play this song over and over. Robert, can you sing the song?
Oh, it's – well, yeah. It's happy, happy Halloween, Halloween, Halloween. Yeah.
To the tune of London Bridge. Like once the movie's over, you will be singing it for years. And so they find out in the end that Dan O'Herlihy's goal is to –
Oh, you skipped over something really important, and that's the fact that there are androids.
Oh, yeah, yeah, yeah. No, that's part of – Dan O'Herlihy, he's got a factory full of like thugs that are androids in – three-piece suits.
What?
And, yeah, and they run around killing people all to service his ultimate goal of giving Halloween masks out to children everywhere so that when the Halloween masks are activated by the television commercial, a microchip made of a piece of Stonehenge that's inside the mask. Did I say map a minute ago? I think I meant mask. A piece of Stonehenge microchip inside the mask turns into a laser that shoots the child's head and turns the head into crickets and snakes. And that's his plan.
Wow. I did not – I mean, I knew it was loosely about masks that did things, but I had no idea.
One of the best things about it, though, is so John Carpenter did not direct this.
Okay, but, Noel said he did, and I didn't think that was right.
No, yeah, that's wrong.
I can't remember who directed it off.
Tommy Lee Wallace, of the It miniseries with Tim Curry.
Oh, okay.
But the soundtrack was John Carpenter and Alan Howarth, and in my opinion, it's probably the best Carpenter Howarth soundtrack. It's Halloween to the max. It's everything that you like in other Carpenter soundtracks, except somehow just more electric. I put that one like score wise right at the top.
I love it. I listen to that soundtrack all the time.
Wow.
And do you know the origin of the theme song for your show, the show we're on right now?
No.
I think Noel made it inspired by a track I sent him from the Halloween 3 soundtrack.
Well, all right, that all makes sense then, because I told Noel when I was commissioning that piece, I was like, I want something sort of 80s and synthy, and I referenced Carpenter, and I was like, and just go wild. So this is specifically Halloween 3 inspired?
Yeah.
Which track?
I think so.
Was it Chariots of Pumpkins?
I think it's Chariots of Pumpkins.
Yeah,
I think he was like, you know, I sent him a Chariots of Pumpkins link, and I was like, use this as your jumping off point.
Wow. Man, I didn't know that. Thanks for that then. I didn't know you influenced the movie crush so much.
Well, we'll hear what he says. He could dispute me, but I think this is the case.
All right, so I threw some questions out at you guys, and we've already talked a little bit about the first one, but I'm curious about mainstream, or what you would consider mainstream horror filmmakers and or movies, and kind of what some of your favorites are.
I have to go with John Carpenter.
Yeah.
Yeah.
No doubt.
I mean, he is the master.
I mean, it's hard to say when you're in the horror world, I don't know what actually counts as mainstream.
Right.
Because there's stuff that, like, everybody who's into horror knows about, but the people who aren't into horror probably don't know about at all.
Yeah.
So I don't know if that's mainstream or not.
I'm probably asking the wrong guys.
But, yeah, as far as, like, definitely mainstream directors, I couldn't say other than Carpenter. I mean, Carpenter's made so many wonderful films. And also, going back to what we started on earlier, he's made some great bad films.
Mm-hmm.
Like if you've ever seen Ghosts of Mars, that just hits all
I never
of
saw
the
that.
Bad movie notes. I mean, it's the kind of movie that you get the feeling they did not work over the texture of how the lines would sound when spoken by actors.
Right.
So they try to replicate the character of Snake Plissken from Escape from New York by having a character named Desolation Williams. And characters actually like go around calling him. It's like, hey, Desolation.
Played by Ice Cube, by the way.
Was it Ice Cube?
Really? Yeah. They don't even call him Des?
No, they. Well, maybe they do eventually, but at least at some point they're calling it. It's like, what's up, Desolation?
That's weird.
Yeah.
There's so many great elements in that film, though, even though the final product doesn't really come together because you have a pretty good cast. Like mm-hmm. You got, again, Ice Cube. You got,
Isn't Sinise in that one, or is he?
Gary Sinise?
Or am I thinking of a different one?
That might be
Mission to Mars.
He's in that. But this has Jason Statham.
Oh, Jason Statham.
With Pam Grier.
Pam Grier's yeah. in it.
Oh,
yeah.
Wow.
Yeah. It's not good. I mean, I don't know if you should see it if you're not into, like, really bad horror movies.
Yeah.
But, I mean, so there's that end of the spectrum. That's Carpenter in the, late 90s, early 2000s.
Yeah.
But early Carpenter just cannot be beat. And I love his weirder movies that a lot of people don't like. Our producer Ramsey here, I know I lent him my copy of Prince of Darkness, and I think he was not into it. But
he gave us a middle road signal.
Well, I love Prince of Darkness by John Carpenter. Have you seen that one?
I haven't. I can picture the cover in my head of the poster. Green.
Yes.
Like stretchy face.
Yeah.
Yeah. I don't know why I didn't see that one.
You should check it out. I mean, I can't promise you'll like it, but if you like very weird, bonkers, original plot, I can't think of another movie that's got a story like it where there's this whole thing about quantum physics and about the anti-God and like the devil being a part of physics. It's crazy.
Yeah, it does play nicely with some. I mean, I wouldn't call it a science-y horror film, but it uses some science set pieces rather effectively.
I mean, the science is not like accurate, but well, in a way, it's more accurate than most movies that do.
Yeah, that's all.
Physics,
it's all I asked for from horror films is like they just give it lip service.
You know?
That's nice.
But yeah, it's a lot of fun, and it's actually got some really scary parts. I think it's got this really cool dream sequence mm-hmm. where like there's this garbled message that keeps coming through to people in dreams.
Yeah,
because it's the people in the future are communicating with people in the past through their dreams and this transmission with tachyons or something.
Yeah, I think so. And it's got Donald Pleasance, of course.
Oh, yeah. Nice. Yeah. When he turns up, you know, you're in for something special.
Victor Wong is in that one too.
Yes, yes.
Mostly known as Egg Shin in Big Trouble in
Little
China.
Yeah. Yeah, he's great.
Yeah, he is. He plays like an old physics professor in it, and he's just wonderful.
So what all did he make that was horror? I mean,
Carpenter?
Obviously, yeah. I mean, The Thing and Halloween,
mm-hmm.
Prince of Darkness.
Yeah. One of my favorites, like later day Carpenter, is In the Mouth of Madness, which is sort of a Lovecraftian themed picture. It starts Sam Neill.
Yeah.
As a
we had people recommend it on Facebook last week. That's a good one.
Yeah. I've always enjoyed it. That's one I can watch again and again and find something new in.
In the Mouth of Madness. Yeah. I need to. I like horror movies, guys. But I was telling Noel, like, if my wife was more into it, I would watch more. But she's not, and so it's just one of those things where, like, I got to go off by myself and do it, which is fine. But every time I watch a good horror movie, it really like it's kind of like no other genre as far as like it makes me feel like I should watch more horror movies.
But your wife won't watch horror movies.
Nah, she's not into it. But and again, I told Noel she wants to know what happens. Like, I came back from Hereditary and I was like, this movie fucking blew my mind.
Oh, it was so good.
And it was like one of the scariest things I've ever seen and unsettling. And she was like, well, tell me about it. And I was like, well, do you want to see it? She was like, I don't think so, but tell me like the whole thing.
Have you ever tried getting her up to speed with like ramping up through bad horror movies? You start that way, they're funny, right? You know, you get used to horror in a funny setting.
Nah. I see what you mean, but she wouldn't be into that.
See, I have a similar thing with my wife. I've spent, I think, 3 years trying to get her to watch It Follows with me because when it came out,
yeah, I thought that's one Emily might like.
Yeah, I like. Yeah, it has. I mean, it's so well shot, well acted. It's not gratuitous.
Totally agree.
And but it took 3 years to get to that point when she like finally watched it with me.
Did she like
it last week? She loved it. Yeah.
All right. Does she like horror movies at all normally?
Sometimes I guess she doesn't. I don't think she likes being like creeped out by a film.
Right. Yeah. See, Emily just gets really like. It stays with her, and, you know, she gets scared in the house. Mm-hmm. And I got to admit, man, last night after Halloween, it was, I think, 1 a.m. when it was over. I go down – we're in this rental house right now because we're renovating our house, so we had to completely move out. And it's in the woods, and it's got glass everywhere, and it's cool. But and I'm not one to usually get freaked out, but I have to admit, last night when I let my dogs out at 1 a.m, I was, you know – I saw my reflection and I kind of went, oh, okay, that's just me. And one of the dogs barked really loudly and that scared me. Mm-hmm. So it definitely like, I'm not too ashamed to admit it. It gets into me as well.
Well, it sounds like a setup for a horror movie.
Oh, totally.
Podcaster.
Rental house.
Right. Rental house. Yeah. Walking around glass everywhere.
Found audio horror movie. Right. Has anybody done that yet?
No. But it's, well, this doesn't ruin anything, but the new Halloween, the couple of the characters are podcasters, which I thought was very funny.
Did they like knife some true crime podcasters? Everybody's been waiting for that.
So did movies stay with you guys like that? Like, do you get freaked out and... To me, that's part of the fun of it is to that adrenaline, you know, whatever. You guys probably know the science of it a little more.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I would say in some cases, it's generally not what I want from my horror films. Like I want to be, you know, sort of creatively engaged with it or, you know, just kind of taken away. Like I don't want to be me when I'm watching the horror film.
Yeah.
And then afterwards, I'd rather just sort of go out thinking about the ideas that it gave me.
Uh-huh.
But there is something kind of thrilling about like suddenly being afraid in your house, not because of like natural threats, but because the thing from It Follows might come in, you know?
I like being scared by horror movies, and I am sometimes. Uh-huh. I mean, I've watched so many of them. I've gotten a little immune to especially like the very conventional types of scares that you see over and over.
Sure.
Like a mirror scare can't get me anymore because I've seen it a million times, you know, where they're in the medicine cabinet and then they close it and the mirror's there and there's some boogans behind them. Ooh, And
great
then,
trope.
Yeah, it's in every horror movie and that just can't scare me anymore because I'm watching for it anytime anybody's in a medicine cabinet. It can't surprise me. And I'm just like, oh, okay. But a lot of like Hereditary really, after it was over, well, I felt this weird mix of having been terrified by the movie, but also I was in the theater by myself and I was just looking around at people with my mouth open, like, did you see that too? Wow.
Yeah.
And there is a weird kind of way. I don't want to spoil anything about Hereditary, but the end of that movie is not just scary, but it transforms into this kind of beautiful, transcendent thing.
Yeah. Yeah, kind of like the end of The Witch, too.
Yes. Oh, The Witch is one of my favorite recent horror movies.
Yeah.
It's so good.
Yeah, I have this weird reaction, and Nolan and I did a little review of Hereditary, and I think it's probably the human body, like, trying to protect itself. But in a movie like Hereditary, when I am curled up in my seat with my fist clenched so just tight, like that's my move. I laugh sometimes at something that's so off the charts, fucked up and scary. I find myself kind of laughing. And part of it is, I think, self-protection and preservation. And part of it is, man, like what a great idea as a filmmaker. And I don't know what that is.
Laughing?
Yeah.
Well, we actually, it may have been.
It was you and Christian.
Me and Christian did an episode on this maybe last year or the year before.
I think it was last October.
And it was titled like, Why Do We Laugh at Horror Films?
Oh, okay.
And there are, I think, a few different ideas there. But one of them is that laughing, like when you're scared and then you are not killed by something, the laughter is kind of like an immediate signal to other humans to let everybody know, hey, I'm not dead. Hey, there's not really a threat. You know, when I screamed and jumped earlier, everybody can calm down because there's not a killer in the house.
Okay.
Do you ever hurt yourself at home? Like you stub your toe and you scream or something like that. And then somebody's like, oh, is everything okay? And then what do? You start laughing.
Yeah.
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 I think
yeah.
It's kind of like that. It's like, okay, we're coming down now. Everything's all right.
Right.
Or it depends how hard you stub your toe. I'm more liable to like double down and say, no, I'm not okay.
Yeah.
Well,
it's
that's
the coffee
true
table's
too.
Fault.
Yeah.
They got me.
Man, that's good stuff. I mean, that's got to go back to like cavemen sitting around the fire and stuff.
Yeah. I think it does just predate language.
Yeah. That's awesome.
Well, I mean, one of the things I love most about horror movies is not just the feeling of being scared, you know, that raw sort of body physiological feeling, but I think that fear is maybe the most revealing emotion in multiple ways. It's like, you know, how when you go throughout your life, you've always got these sort of layers of performance up. You've got like how you are during a job interview.
Yeah.
And that's not really you. And then you've got how you are around your friends. Mm-hmm. Maybe that's a little bit more really you. And then there's how you are at home with your like very close, trusted loved ones and all that. And then under that, I think, is how you are when you're scared.
Yeah.
That's like baseline.
Absolutely,
who you
dude.
Really are that even you don't really know.
Uh-huh.
And that when you get scared, that part of you comes out and you get to see what it's like.
Uh-huh.
You get to see like where your mind goes when all of those layers are removed.
Yeah.
And it's interesting in that way, like you get to see your own reaction through fear, but you also get to see what other people think is scary.
Right.
You know, so one of my favorite things about bad horror movies is that they're – I think one of the most culturally interesting types of artifacts is like you get to see what other people out there in the culture think would be scary,
right?
Or what preoccupies them when their minds start going to a dark place.
Yeah.
And in that way, even when the movies are bad, they're usually very culturally and psychologically interesting.
Uh-huh.
Yeah, I mean, it's been pointed out that a lot of times it's when you have some sort of cultural shift going on, it's not the art films that are necessarily going to be the first ones to jump in and try to tell a story about it. No, it's going to be the exploitation filmmakers. It's going to be the horror films and the B-movies.
The lowest of lowbrow gets there first, and they show you what they're worried about.
Yeah, that's interesting because when you started talking about the reaction, I immediately thought of that sort of thing that went around the internet when they had the photos of people in the haunted house, those great reaction shots. And, you know, like the toughest dudes in the world just looking like little babies. And it is. It's so revealing because it just strips away everything, all the ego and everything. And that's kind of a horror movie trope too, like when there's the group of teenagers in the woods, like how are they all going to react? Who's going to be living at the end? Who's going to pee their pants?
Right. I mean, so one of you asked us about horror movie tropes earlier.
And sure.
One of the funniest ones that I think shows up, especially in slasher movies like the early 80s slasher wave, is you've got – I don't know if this is the right term. I'd call them something like focus group friends, where there's a group of friends that they're – why would these people ever hang out with each other? It's like one jock, one nerd, one punk rocker, one stuck-up rich girl. You know what I mean?
Oh, absolutely.
Yeah, and it's like these people would never naturally be friends or hang out together, but that's the group that went up to the cabin for the weekend.
Yeah.
And I think it's because – there's this natural curiosity, especially in the slasher movies, which are less about being scary and more about a kind of like geeky curiosity, like what would it look like if you got an axe in your face? And so there's that curiosity element, and you're trying to see like how would these different archetypes, these different types of people react in a fear scenario?
Oh,
that's
absolutely
what people want to see.
Yeah, like how would I react? And so
I'm more like the nerd or I'm more like the jock.
Absolutely.
That's a good insight.
That was one of the great questions that a Facebooker threw at us last week was, would you guys survive a horror movie? And I said I would because I was like, I'm old and chubby, but man, I've had an amazing fight or flight response. So
I thought you were going to say because I'm a virgin.
No, yeah. I can get moving if I need to. And I would try and out crazy somebody with physical violence.
You know, this comes back to something that we were just talking about on the Stuff to Blow Your Mind podcast. And it comes back to what you said earlier about how we're a whole different person when we're afraid.
Mm-hmm.
And there's this idea that we have essentially two fear networks in our brain.
Mm-hmm.
One is the planning network.
You
know, we're thinking about what would it be like or more to the point, it would be like, what are the things that might happen to me and what can I do now to prevent them?
Right.
And then the other is the real time, like unconscious reaction to events. And like you said, we don't really know that person all that well. And I wonder if a lot of times we watch these horror movies to kind of to kind of guess how we might respond, just to look at these archetypes and see how they respond, and also to sort of cling on to ones
right.
as like the hopeful model for how we will respond when the bad things happen.
Yeah, yeah, for sure. When I was a kid, I think everyone probably – some people still do this. I know Emily does. But anytime I was in a room, like if staying with someone or my own house, I would always be like fire poker. Like I would always have the thing in the room of like that's what I would run for and grab, you know, to defend myself. And I don't do that anymore, which is weird. I don't think I've gotten any braver.
Yeah.
Or –
or do you just carry a fire poker all the fate. Time?
I don't know. Maybe. I'm not sure. I mean, I guess I do know where the various, you know, we have no weapons in our house other than like the golf club or something. But I don't know. I don't think about it as much. But Emily is still all about that. Like if she we stayed at these friends in Napa Valley one time a few years ago, and they live like at the top of this mountain in the woods, and it's idyllic and beautiful and the safest place on earth, and they don't lock their doors. They didn't even have a lock in their little guest house, and that freaked her out so much. She was like, I was awake all night.
Oh, no.
I was like, Emily, we're in Napa Valley in the middle of the woods. She was like, exactly.
Right.
That's where it happens. And so she had her weapons picked out, and, you know, that vase is what I would grab and throw. And so she's always ready.
Yeah. Well, in rural California, that's where Dan O'Herlihy's androids come for you.
Yeah, that's true. Or the Golden State Killer.
Ooh.
Or Zodiac. Yeah, what am I talking about? So what about – I know people would love to hear some deep cuts from you guys movie-wise.
Well, I think – I already did Halloween 3.
Yeah,
that's got to be
yeah, but I mean that's even – that was mainstream enough to be like a major release. Like what are your favorite really like kind of hard to find out there deep cut horror films?
Well, one that I'm really fond of is a 1986 film called Terror Vision.
I don't know if you guys have seen this one.
It's directed by this guy.
Is this the rock and roll one?
It has some rock elements to it. I think it's out on like Amazon Prime right now. I think everybody can stream it. But it has this kind of gonzo neon 80s vibe to it.
Uh-huh.
And the plot, as I recall, is that you have this trash compactor kind of blob Shoggoth kind of monster that escapes from aliens and like ventures into these people's house via satellite TV and starts messing with them and shape-shifting. And it's just the right balance of like fun and a little bit trashy, but not too trashy, and has fabulous monster effects. It's one of the films that I didn't see like back in the day, and I discovered it for myself in recent years, and it's probably right up there at the top in terms of films that I think really need more like of a cult following and more attention.
Terror Vision. All right, that's on the list.
You know, I'm probably going to spend too much of this podcast talking about
Halloween 3.
bad horror movies that are funny. So I want to actually focus on one that I think is really good and subtle and scary.
Uh-huh.
That I think is I've never heard of anybody else other than my friend who recommended it to me knowing of this one. Have you heard of a little Australian movie called Lake Mungo?
Nope.
I think it's from 2007 or so, somewhere in like mid-2000s. And it is sort of the found footage. No, it's not found footage style. It's documentary style. Mm-hmm. So it's filmed as if it's a documentary, but it's fictional. And it's basically just a documentary about a family that dealt with a death in the family. And it turns into this ghost story that it's not going to have, you know, horrifying boo scares or anything like that. It just has some really subtle documentary style ghost imagery that absolutely got under my skin.
Yeah.
After the first time I saw it, I was like alone in the house and I couldn't stand it.
I
was so scared.
Oh, yeah.
Stick around for the end credits of that movie, by the way.
Uh-huh.
Yeah. I think the director has only made that movie and hasn't really done much of anything else. So, I just wonder what happens with people like that.
Yeah. I thought you were going to say Wolf Creek for a minute when you said Australian.
No.
That was good, though. I liked Wolf Creek.
I haven't seen it. That's more like a murder movie, right?
Yeah, but those are the scariest ones to me. Like, I don't know what's like legit scares you guys, but
ghosts.
Oh, really?
Yeah, ghosts.
Really?
Yeah, since I was a kid, it was always something that could really happen, like a dude breaking into our home and killing
us. Those are the horror films I just will not see. Like, I do not want to see a home invasion horror film at this point in my life.
Those are tough, man.
You like slasher movies sometimes.
I like
the bad ones.
I like some bad slasher movies. And to really define like my taste in slasher movies, my favorite Friday the 13th is Jason X, where he's in outer space.
Yeah, I never saw that one.
That's the best.
Didn't make it to the 10th in the series?
I don't know how many of those I saw, just a couple. I don't go super deep, so. So 10, huh? Outer space.
Yeah, outer space is, it's, you know, Jason is safely removed from me, even more so than being at a summer camp. I'm not
but
into
real
that.
Home invasion, like The Strangers or something
yeah,
like that.
Yeah, I've
never seen that one.
I don't have
that
any interest in
scary.
Seeing that. I'm sure it looks... There is a few of those that, you know, people love them. They look like they're tremendously well made, but it's just too real. I just don't want to do it.
Yeah, I'm with you. I mean, that's why it scares me. So let's unpack the ghost thing.
Yeah.
What's up with that?
I don't know. I just find ghosts the most frightening. I mean, I've seen a million vampire movies, and I really love some of them. I can think of fantastic vampire movies. Guillermo del Toro's Cronos. That's mm-hmm. a wonderful. Have you seen that one?
Yeah
it's so good. But vampires just never scare me.
Right. Same here.
Same thing with, you know, werewolves. I love some werewolf movies. Mm-hmm. American Werewolf in London is fantastic. But it's just like a big dog, you know. It's just not that scary to me. For some reason, ghosts, that really gets to me. It's something about I think it's their non-corporeality that makes them especially scary, because when you've got a vampire or any kind of physical monster, though I generally love physical monsters, you think like, okay, I could run away from that.
Right.
I could fight it, whatever. When there's a ghost, it's like you don't know what the rules are and you don't know how it gets to you.
Yeah.
And it feels like a different level of conflict that you don't really understand.
Right. You can't know? Club it with a baseball bat.
Yeah.
Yeah. Interesting.
And ghosts also, they generally are not just like out looking for somebody to eat, right? Ghost stories almost always have like some kind of involvement with the victim. The victim usually has some kind of like guilty conscience about something, or you know what I mean? Like there's some kind of moral involvement with the ghost.
Right. Or it's a, or they just want you to get the fuck out of there.
Yes, that's a very
house or
whatever.
And
that's one of those types of conflicts, right? Like you're in their territory, you moved in, and they want it.
Yeah,
that's what I think. I tend to see more often. It's just like the idea that now I'm messed. I've somehow messed up. Now I'm involved with a ghost, and there's no way out of it. Like it doesn't. I don't know. I'm thinking of things like The Ring, Oculus, Poltergeist. Like they were all kind of
enjoy all of those.
Wrong people. I mean, or the people in the wrong place at the wrong time,
right.
And they have to deal with this thing.
Yeah. Well, yeah, again, with all of those movies, it's that you don't really know the rules, right? You don't understand when you're incurring the wrath of this ghostly other force.
Yeah. Oh, I mean, I guess on all of those, it's like with Mirrors and Oculus, which was, what's that guy's name? Flanagan? Mike Flanagan, I think.
Oh, is that right?
Yeah. The same guy who did the Hill House show that's on Netflix right now.
Okay, I haven't watched
really
that yet.
I haven't seen that yet. Is it good?
Movie. It's good. It's a huge downer, but it's really
what
good.
The show is?
Oculus is.
Oh, okay.
I love it, but it's a really depressing horror film. I have not seen the TV series yet.
I haven't either. Have you?
No, I haven't.
I've heard good things.
No, I've heard. Well, I just for the first time earlier this year read Shirley Jackson's The Haunting of Hill House, which is just a fantastic ghost novel.
Yeah.
Have you ever read it?
No.
It's so great because it's genuinely very scary, I think, you know, written in the 50s and still scary, or 50s or 60s, whichever. Still scary, but also very funny.
Uh-huh.
And that's a thing that I think I really appreciate when a horror movie can do, when they give you the hot and cold showers.
Absolutely.
Where it is both, it has scenes that are totally comfortable and warm and funny and make you feel good. And that sets you up even more for the great scary scenes.
Yeah.
Movies that just go to 11 on discomfort and terror the whole time, those get monotonous. They're usually not very good.
Yeah. I think I kind of agree with that.
One thing that comes to mind here, you said that with the ghosts, you don't know what the rules are. And
yeah.
That's like the scary part. It does seem like with some of these movies, okay, haunted mirrors. No, most people really don't actually understand how mirrors work, and therefore it's terrifying.
Yeah.
With haunted house movies, especially Poltergeist, like home ownership, nobody really has that down. And therefore, like, the ghosts are the perfect metaphor for it.
They're a metaphor for the renovators who came in before they flipped the house on you. Yeah, and you get to find out all the stuff that they cut corners on over time.
Well, and a lot of times that's a big part of a horror film is figuring out the rules as the characters. Like with It Follows, that was a big part of that movie, was is especially for that one because it was unseen.
Yeah.
And I think I need to see that one again.
Oh, man. I could watch that so one good. So many times.
Yeah.
It's one of the most original horror mythologies I can think of.
It's hard to do that nowadays, too. It's hard to come up with original stuff.
Yeah. It artfully allows room for contemplation. Like, it forces you to think, well, what actually happened with this scene that, you know, like, what happened when she went out to the boat? What happened when this character is driving through this bad part of town towards the end of the film? Whereas, like, a lesser movie, a really bad horror film, will have those kind of gaps due to negligence.
Right.
Whereas here, they're part of the design, and it works perfectly.
Yeah, that was a good one. Nolan and I were talking about, too, how the setting of that movie, the time, was sort of – it was weird because it felt like the 80s.
But also now?
Yeah.
Yeah.
It was kind of cool how they did that.
Well, they got that that 80s, like, Spielbergia, kids on bikes in a neighborhood kind of thing. They had that going on. And so that definitely took you back to the 80s, even though it seemed like the technology was more – like, there were cell phones in it, right?
It has weird technology in it because they're using flip phones, and then somebody has, like, a clamshell e-reader that doesn't actually exist.
I think they made that for the movie,
And Noel's contention, I think I agree with him, is that all of that kind of unsettles you as a viewer because it kind of throws you off because you don't even know when it takes place.
Yeah.
And that's just sort of an unsettling feeling in itself.
Just the thing I was talking about with the hot and cold showers, It Follows does that naturally because every time they gain distance from the thing, it's walking, so they know they've bought some time and they can rest for a bit.
Yeah, yeah.
It's a perfect mythology for that kind of structure in a horror movie.
Yeah, I mean, if there aren't peaks and valleys and relief of tension, although a movie like Hereditary was a pretty good example of there weren't a lot of funny bits in that at all. Mm-hmm. I don't remember any, were there?
There were a
That was
couple.
Fairly taut.
It wasn't very funny, but it did have, like, moments where you could rest.
You know,
it wasn't just terror and discomfort the entire time. Like, there were the initial times that, you know, Toni Collette met the other woman and before that turns.
Yeah, that's true.
I don't want to spoil anything, but.
Well, we already reviewed it on the show.
Oh, okay.
Yeah.
I haven't seen it, but the trailers don't make it look tremendously funny.
No, it's not
a
funny.
Lot of gags.
There are low stress moments in it.
Yeah, but that's one of the great parts about, and it's a certain kind of horror movie where if you have a legitimate comedy written in, it's always welcome for me. And the new Halloween has some funny bits.
Yeah.
And, of course, like the great Sam Raimi and all of his movies. Army of Darkness, actually. That was probably a full-on comedy.
Yeah.
Yeah.
That, I don't even think there was much horror in that. Would Although those creatures are still pretty frightening.
Oh, indeed.
Yeah.
I'd almost just say Evil Dead 2 is a comedy. Would you not?
Yeah, I mean, someone put that on the Facebook list as their favorite horror movie, and I did pose that question. I was like, it is horror, but not like the first one. The first one was definitely way more horror, I think, than comedy. But he always has struck that balance really well, I think. All right, guys, so let's what's your all-time favorite horror movie? Do you have one?
Man, that's hard to say. I'm a big fan of Jaws, but I don't know if you consider that a horror movie.
No, I don't.
More of
that's an adventure movie to me.
I watch that every year.
But it's one of my favorite movies.
Every summer on the 4th of July, Rachel and I watch Jaws. We like fall asleep to it at the end of the night.
So great.
It's kind of perfect.
Now, that movie's too fun
to
me to be a horror movie.
But it is a great monster movie.
Sure.
But yeah, I wouldn't call it a horror movie.
I'm really bad at all-time favorites. I whenever somebody asks me that, I just have to like list things that pop to mind.
Yeah,
that
just,
I like
mean,
a lot. But I mean,
talk about any of your favorites.
But I mean, recent movies. I definitely think of The Witch. I think of The Babadook. I think of
That was great.
Oh, so good.
Uh-huh. See, now that's an example of a film. Everybody said it was great, and I sat down to watch it, and it was. I think this was not long after we got our son. And I was just like, no, I can't do this. I just can't watch a haunted film with some sort of a child element in it.
Yeah.
Well, I've heard that about people. Like, sometimes having kids changes what kind of horror movies they can enjoy.
They ruin everything. Really? Kids do, yeah.
Yeah.
You can't enjoy anything you used to enjoy. No, I'm with you, though, for sure. Like, in any stuff involving kids now is like, tough for me. For sure.
You know, Gene Siskel used to – I know you do the, you know, What Did Ebert Say?
Yeah.
And Gene Siskel used to always complain about that. Like when they were reviewing movies on Siskel and Ebert, any time there was a movie that put a child at peril, he would massively penalize the movie for it.
Yeah.
Like sometimes it seemed like that would be the sole criterion that drove him to a thumbs down for a movie.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I get that.
He hated it.
What about you, Robert? Do you have an all-time favorite? Or
yeah, it has to be hands down the original Texas Chainsaw Massacre.
Oh,
really?
Yeah. Like it, even though it's not supernatural. It doesn't have monsters, and generally my thing is monsters, but just it feels like a really almost kind of a perfect storm of elements. Like you have that kind of grimy late 70s documentary feel, this rural setting, this sense of like, I mean, the opening with the solar flares, everything just feels like cosmically misaligned. That's one that I feel is just great from beginning to end.
Yeah, there's something about just like a fucked up hillbilly crew. Well, family that's like, I know it's terrible because it just identifies like one segment of the population and saying, you people are creepy.
But wait, no, it's Flatlands in Texas. So it'd be Flatbillies, right?
Oh, yeah. Flatbillies, not hillbillies. Is that a word?
Flatbillies? No, I just made that.
Oh, okay.
We might can make go wide with that one. That's good.
The Texas hillbilly chainsaw family, the Flatbillies.
Well, and just for sheer sound design, I pointed out last week when they were talking about the best murder weapons. It's hard to beat that chainsaw.
Yeah.
It's just so loud and it's just terrifying.
Yeah.
Even though it's not a good murder weapon.
Oh no, not at all.
In reality.
Yeah. Like the
y'all
whole
thought
like,
about this.
It's unwieldy. Yeah. You got to count on it to start.
Well, I know Noel was a big fan of Panos Cosmatos' Mandy as well. Have you seen
it?
Yeah,
I haven't seen it yet. I can't wait.
Well, there is a scene where a character is going to sneak up on somebody with a chainsaw, and they're like starting it up. And sound design wise, it's great, but of course it's totally impractical.
Yeah, if it doesn't start, you're just stuck with this heavy thing. Mm-hmm. I mean, I guess you could try and hit someone with it, but it's too heavy to even swing, really.
Yeah.
A knife for me is the scariest shit. There's something about being stabbed in a kitchen knife that's just terrifying.
Another recent favorite I thought of. Have you seen House of the Devil, Ty West, House of the Devil?
From yes.
Like 2008 or 2009, sometime around then.
Yep.
I thought that one was just killer. Slow burn, long, slow build. I like movies like that. I mean, Lake Mungo is like that too, where there's just a slow, steady building of tension.
That's my favorite thing too. I thought that was good. That had unrecognizable to me, but what's the actress that from Top Gun?
Oh, yeah. What is her name?
There was a woman
Kelly
in Top Gun?
Something?
I don't remember.
Yeah, remember the love interest in Top Gun?
Oh, wait, she's in that?
You thought it was just all homoerotic tension?
That's the only thing I remember.
Was Goose in House of the Devil?
No, the lady.
Iceman.
I can't remember her name, but she's the old lady in that movie.
Mary Warrenos?
No. Am I thinking of the right movie?
You might be thinking of the wrong movie.
I'm going to look.
I think the old lady in House of the Devil is the lady who is in like Eating Raoul and the beginning of Chopping Mall. Have you seen Chopping Mall?
No. Oh, that one's so good.
Oh, man. Yeah, it's an 80s technology gone amok movie where they've got robots that are supposed to be these security droids to defend a mall. And, of course, some horny teenagers stay overnight to hang out and party in the furniture store. But then all of the security droids attack. And it's pretty great.
So I was thinking of The Innkeepers.
Oh, that was great, too.
Yeah, that's the one I was
thinking also
of.
Ty West. They're both Ty West movies.
I did not see House of the Devil.
Oh, you should see House of the Devil, man.
And Kelly McGillis from Top Gun is the creepy old lady in
Kelly
The
Innkeepers. McGillis. Okay. Did I get the other lady's name right? Mary Woronov, I think maybe it is.
Oh, okay.
All right.
So I need to see House of the Devil then.
Yeah, and it's got a what's his name? From Manhunter and Tom Noonan.
Oh
yeah,
Tom
sure.
Noonan's
one of
like
the great movie creeps of all time.
The creepiest mm-hmm. dude ever. Uh-huh. And I don't know anything about Tom Noonan personally, but I always feel bad because I bet he's just the sweetest guy on earth.
Yeah,
but he is the creepiest human ever born.
Yeah, but you know what? When you're born with a face like that, like you're making money off of it. Mm-hmm. It's like the guy who played Buffalo Bill.
Oh, God.
Just, he's been in so many things, and he's always Buffalo Bill to me.
He
bad for him, but
he was in that that remake of The Hills Have Eyes, and he plays the dad, and he's great in that. Like, that's one of these revenge films where there's so much care put into the beginning of it that you end up falling in love with these characters to a certain extent, and then you really don't want anything terrible to happen to it. But
right.
It was so weird to just totally buy into him as just this dad.
Boy, talk about a character, though. The Hills Have Eyes, that guy.
Oh, God. Yeah.
I mean.
what's his name?
Berryman?
Yes, Michael Berryman.
Yeah.
Not John Berryman.
Who's that?
The poet, John Berryman.
Oh, okay.
Oh yeah, yeah. All right.
Michael Berryman's the only Berryman for me.
Okay. Yeah.
All right, guys. Well, we have to finish up, but I don't feel like we're done. So I would like to do this again. Can we?
I'd love that.
I think maybe we can do a part three and nudge this into November a little bit. Because I feel like we're almost – I feel like we're kind of halfway done with this conversation.
I would love to come back anytime, Chuck.
All right. Well, let's do it like in the next couple of weeks and go ahead and get it out there because – I didn't start early enough in October for all these horror specials.
Well, and plus, all the other big holidays are all about nudging in on Halloween's time. So I think Halloween should get to have at least the first half of November.
Okay.
They're selling Christmas stuff in October. Yeah. We get to have Halloween episodes
I already saw
in
that
November.
Stuff up in the store. That's ridiculous.
Yeah.
You maybe we can talk about like Silent Night, Deadly Night movies like that.
There are some good ones.
Christmas horror
are
special.
There?
Oh, well, I don't know about good Silent Night, Deadly Nights, but there are some solid Christmas horror selection.
Oh, yeah. Rare Exports. You know Rare Exports? Oh, that one's great. It's a Finnish, I think. Yeah, it's Finnish Christmas horror movie. Very, very Spielberg-y. It's got like killer Santa Clauses. It's great.
Oh, man. All right, guys. Thanks for coming. Everyone check out Stuff to Blow Your Mind. And I'm serious. Let's get in here like next week or the next week and finish this up.
All right. Sounds good to me.
Thanks, dudes.
Thanks, man.